Kootenai County Sheriff's deputies arrived at the home of Daniel and Kendi Howard around 11 p.m. on February 2, 2021. Dan Howard, a Marine and former state trooper, was inconsolable. He had just discovered his 48-year-old wife, Kendi, dead in the bathtub. Through cries of anguish, the distraught husband claimed there had been no foul play. But when investigators began digging into the details and peering just under the surface, they decided that the evidence was telling a very different story. Hi there, I'm Kevin, and welcome to Just Thought Lounge. Today's case is a complicated one. Kootenai County investigators pursued this case relentlessly as a homicide based on their determination that the scene had been staged. But medical experts disagreed over the cause of death. The physical evidence raised some red flags, but offered no clear conclusions. Over several years, the investigation was fueled mostly by logical speculation and the feeling that something was not right. Or rather, that someone was not being truthful. Let's take a look. In February 2021, Daniel and Kendi Howard had owned their home in Athol for almost 20 years. There, they had raised two children together, daughter Brooke from Kendi's previous relationship, and a son, Wyatt, a few years younger than his sister, whom they shared. Both children had lived in the family home as adults, albeit temporarily. Brooke was a new mother herself, and Kendi adored spending time with her granddaughter. More recently, the children had moved out, and tensions began to rise. 55-year-old Daniel, after serving in the Marine Corps, had gone on to a 20-year career in law enforcement. During that time, he had served as a sheriff's deputy and an Idaho state trooper. By early 2021, he was working 3 weeks on and 3 weeks off in Alaska. On the night of February 2nd, he had been home in Athol for only a few days. It was nearly 11 p.m. and the couple had been alone in the house. Dan recalled that Kendi had prepared her regular evening bath around 9, but had not reemerged from the bathroom. When he went upstairs to check in, he found his wife of 27 years deceased in the bathtub. Next to her was a handgun sitting in the now reddened bathwater. Responding deputy Miranda Thomas found Dan Howard pacing and wailing outside of the house. As other deputies entered the home to locate Kendi, Dan paced, hunched over, gagged occasionally, and let out anguished cries.
Sorry, chairperson.
Dan?
Dan, can you have a seat for me?
Please,
guys. Yeah, you can sit if that's better for you. I'm just trying to make you a little more comfortable, okay?
Deputy Thomas would later recall that Dan gagged without vomiting and cried without tears. Officers inside cleared the house and ensured no one else was present.
Sir, any hits?
No.
Okay, so the toys for granted hits?
Yes.
Medical personnel had been called out to respond to the scene, despite Dan's statements to the 911 operator indicating that his wife had already passed on.
Medical's gonna go in there and do their thing. This is their scene now.
Sir, stay with your witness. We're gonna let them come up.
In the bathroom at the top of the stairs, Kootenai County deputies found Kendi undressed in the bathtub. A semi-automatic handgun was visible in the water next to her, and there was a single spent shell casing. The 48-year-old grandmother had sustained a gunshot wound to the head. At first glance, it did not appear to be a homicide. The gun in the water was Kendi's. But there were aspects of the scene that did not appear quite right. There was no clothing nor a bathrobe in the room for her to have changed out of or into. The only towels were decorative hand towels, which matched the decor of the room, not the kind of towel one would have on hand for a bath. Kendi's purse and cell phone were sitting on the bathroom counter, though both were beyond an arm's reach from the tub. Beyond these observations, it was the physical scene that raised the most questions. Kendi had blood on her face that had dried in the opposite direction of how she had, ostensibly, fallen in the bathtub. Investigators noted that the direction of movement appeared to be counter to the laws of gravity. Strands of her hair were loose and rested in the opposing direction across her face. This again suggested she could have been positioned where she was found. There was no spatter at all on her hands. The bath mat at the foot of the tub was soaked through with water, though nowhere else on the floor was wet. To the seasoned investigator, there was one more obvious red flag. The water was clear enough to see through. Had her death been caused by the gunshot to her head in that bathtub, this should not have been the case. Elsewhere in the house, there were unexplained abnormalities. Shards of broken glass were found on the carpet in the bedroom. In the basement, the wood-burning stove was raging. Responding officers described the lower level of the home as uncomfortably hot. They later came to learn from Brooke and other family members that Dan insisted on heating the whole house using the wood burner, claiming that turning on the central heating was too expensive. As a result, the vents on all levels of the home were always open to enable air circulation. The result, Brooke said, was that sound carried easily. From the lower level, one could clearly hear what was going on above. Outside, Deputy Thomas noted that Dan had what appeared to be fresh deodorant stains on his t-shirt. He later told officers that he had showered at about 3:30 that afternoon. By the time they arrived, over 6 hours had passed. Just before discovering his wife, Dan must have also been doing some laundry. Deputy Ben Wheeler, only roughly 5 weeks into the job, found the dryer running. 6 minutes were left on the cycle. Based upon the timestamp on his body camera and the 6 minutes documented on the timer, it was deduced that he must have started the cycle within only a few minutes of calling 911. It was Deputy Wheeler who had the unenviable task of giving Dan Howard the news that his wife was dead.
Dan, I'm Deputy Wheeler. I'm sorry to inform you that your wife is passed.
No, God damn it!
The deputy offered to contact family or anyone else that Dan wanted. After taking down some information to notify their son Wyatt, the deputy began asking the distraught husband a few basic questions about how he had come to discover his wife in the bathroom.
When is the last time that you saw your wife alive? I know this is tough. How long ago? Can you recall?
What time is this?
Did you call 911 that you waiting for the gunshot?
No.
Okay.
I didn't think it was a gunshot. I was downstairs, maybe going. It sounded like somebody hit the floor or something. I don't know.
When was the last time you saw your wife before she went to go take a bath?
Hour and a half. Okay. Hour and a half or something. I don't know. Okay. I really don't know. I'm fucking out
with it. It's about 11:15.
Maybe 9:30.
9:30 or so? Okay.
I don't know.
When Deputy Ben Wheeler had first entered the bathroom, he had held his gloved hand just over the waterline in the bathtub. There were still bubbles present, and the temperature was still warm. Dan sat down with deputies and a detective in his kitchen, where they would conduct a formal interview. Further searching of the house was on hold as law enforcement sought a search warrant. In the meantime, in full view were notepads and other paperwork that suggested the state of the Howard marriage. Most curious was a folder from a family law office with divorce papers inside.
So, what was going on tonight?
Next to the attorney's folder was a notepad listing all of the couple's assets with notations. They assigned the division of each item between them, including properties that the couple owned. Their estate was worth close to $2 million. In Idaho, this would be split equally in a divorce.
But is this a divorce has already been decided, or is it almost been something for discussion?
She wants a divorce one day, she doesn't the next.
John?
Dan explained to Detective Northrop and Detective Lalatin that the two had been having difficulties in the marriage. He suggested that these problems must have been her motivation when she brought the gun into the bath with her that night. Dan explained how they had been finalizing the division of assets two nights earlier, when Kendi told him that one of the items she wanted was her gun. He went to the gun safe and got it out for her.
You know, most of the list we finished tonight. The list she's gonna let me have my safe and guns. You know, and then she picks on something. I picked something. One of the things she wanted was her gun. So, got her gun.
That night, he explained, when Kendi returned home with some food, she had come to realize that there would be a hiccup in the plans to divide the couple's assets. In particular, Dan explained that she had been attempting to purchase a new home of her own in Kamiai, where she had grown up and could be closer to her parents. He believed that the house would need to be split along with everything else, news that was apparently devastating to Kendi. But she was always very emotional, he said.
She got home, you know, she picked up some from the deli and whatever, finalized it. And she flipped it. She realized that the house has to be liquidated too. And she went upstairs and she was taking a bath before bed every fucking night. So I heard the fucking bathroom,
Dan stated clearly that he could hear the bathwater running. He thought that it had perhaps gone into an overflow. When he entered the bathroom, however, he told the detectives that the water was just trickling. He said that the bathroom door was open. He heard something fall to the floor. The Marine, with 20 years of experience in law enforcement, had also been a firearms instructor. He had worked on a SWAT team. Dan did not recognize the noise as a gunshot.
Curtis hit the floor. I didn't think it was a shot. And started watching TV, drank a beer, looked at my list, trying to think, you know. I guess I lost track of time. But okay, is there any reason you have gunshot residue on your person? I shot my 40 today. But I shot her.
When was that?
3:30 or so.
Before his hands could be plastic wrapped and then swabbed for GSR, Detective Lalatin noticed Dan place both of his hands in his pockets. He appeared to be rubbing them against the fabric on his legs. The motion was so noticeable that Dan needed to be told to stop and to keep his hands away from his clothing. He tested negative for GSR. There was some gunshot residue found on Kendi's hands. Dan's DNA was not found in the tub. His DNA was found on a magazine left in Kendi's purse, which sat on the bathroom counter. From the house, Dan called both of his children, his stepdaughter Brooke and son Wyatt. Brooke, upon hearing that her mother had died in what he called a terrible accident, immediately accused her stepfather of murder. Kendi's parents, with whom she was very close and had spoken with hours earlier, were not notified at the same time. The two discovered what had happened independently the next day when they drove into Athol to check in. They had been unable to reach Kendi that morning. In fact, Dan never spoke to his father-in-law at any point after Kendi's death. He called into the funeral home to arrange the payment for her cremation, but he did not attend his wife's funeral. The autopsy on Kendi Howard was undertaken by Dr. John Howard of the Spokane County Medical Examiner's Office in Washington. He was of no relation to Daniel or Kendi. The autopsy was conducted the day following her death on February 3rd. Responding officers at the scene had all reached a similar conclusion. The way Kendi was found and the way that her husband was behaving was deeply suspicious. From patrol deputies, the crime scene investigators, and detectives, not one of them believed that Kendi's death had occurred in the way that Dan had described. Dan's background in law enforcement made his claims to not recognize the sound of a gunshot unlikely. His work experience also meant that he would have been cognizant of the steps to take to stage a crime scene. Law enforcement believed Kendi was likely shot after she had already been killed, possibly strangled and then moved to the bath. Dr. Howard, however, concluded that there was no reason to believe that she had died from anything other than the single gunshot. He decided her cause of death was a gunshot wound and her manner of death was undetermined. Through almost 3 decades of marriage, Kendi and Dan had experienced a few rough patches. The former state trooper had found himself on the opposing side of law enforcement more than once during that time as well. In 2013, the Kootenai County Prosecutor's Office asserted that Dan confronted and threatened to kill one of his closest friends, a man named Matthew Wood. This occurred after Kendi allegedly admitted to having an extramarital relationship with him. Dan allegedly poured syrup in Matthew's vehicle, left him vulgar messages, stole his mail, and fired a shotgun at his house. Dan admitted to some, but not all of these actions. The judge who heard his case said that he believed Daniel Howard acted under considerable stress, brought about by his return to duty following a 2011 police shooting in which he killed a woman. Shortly after that, he learned that his wife had an affair with his best friend. Dan received a 3-year suspended prison sentence. That Kendi was miserable in the marriage was obvious. Brooke recounted how Dan would present himself and the relationship differently in public than private. Around other people, he was often attentive and affectionate towards Kendi. In private, he would routinely insult her. He used callous insults, including calling her fat, stupid, and slutty. The 48-year-old had developed deep insecurities about her body, which manifested in extreme dieting, 4 a.m. gym trips, and eventually scheduling plastic surgery. She also alleged that Dan was more than just verbally abusive. In July 2020, only months before her death, she sent photos of bruising on her arms and chest to friends. Dr. Howard's conclusion was a major setback in the death investigation. His medical opinion contradicted the working theory that Dan had staged the gunshot in the bathtub to cover the murder. One of the greatest inconsistencies in Dan's story was his claimed motive for Kendi's actions. Dan described his wife as over-emotional. He told detectives repeatedly that he had wanted her to reach out for help and to get medication. Family and friends, however, described the mother and grandmother as full of life. For over 10 years, Kendi worked in the supply services department at Kootenai Health. She was a friendly and well-liked coworker. In her spare time, the grandmother loved antiquing. She enjoyed the outdoors, and she loved a nice bubble bath. Kendi was also very chatty and kept in regular contact with her family. She spoke with her mother only hours before her death. They had discussed new furniture to purchase for the house in Kamiai. Kendi had given notice at her work in preparation for the move. She had requested references for new job applications and spoke of her dream of opening a small antique shop in her hometown after she was settled in. She had also moved on romantically. Since the spring of 2020, Kendi had been rekindling a relationship with an old flame from her teenage years. In the years since high school, Daniel Prado had remained in Kamiai and had become friends with Kendi's parents, Janie and Wendell Wilkins. Kendi and Daniel Prado had always been friendly with each other, but more recently, they had spent time together one-on-one doing activities they both enjoyed, hiking, fishing, and antiquing. On January 29th, only a few days before her death, Kendi booked a cosmetic surgical package called a mummy makeover. This included a tummy tuck and a breast augmentation. Kendi was making plans. She appeared to be moving on with her life. In the early morning hours of January 29th, boyfriend Daniel Prado received a phone call through Facebook Messenger from Kendi's phone. When he picked up, he heard an open line. Kendi and Dan were arguing. She sounded scared, yelling towards Dan, "What are you trying to do?" as well as, "Let me close the door." After only 15 seconds, Daniel hung up the line and dialed her parents. He feared intervening directly may worsen an already volatile situation. Janie and Wendell Wilkins called the sheriff's deputies out to their daughter's home.
"Hi, are you Kennedy?"
"Hi, Kennedy, I'm Deputy Trout. We got a call from, I believe, a friend of yours. Do you mind if we come in and talk to you?"
Kendi greeted the deputy at the door and quietly led him inside.
"You must be Mr. Howard, Daniel. Do you talk like Mr. Howard or Daniel? Or Dan, I guess. You mind if we talk to you guys real quick?"
Behind the closed bedroom door, Kendi spoke barely above a whisper.
"So your friend and your mom is kind of concerned about you. I'm not sure who called us. So I just want to make sure we're on the same page and kind of figure out what happened. Just your friends are a lot more worried about you than just, you know, oh, it's the same old thing and all these happens, right? Did it ever become physical?" "Okay. When you woke up, what was he?" "Okay. Did he have anything in his hand or did he say anything?" "Well, I know, but that's why I'm here. I'm here to hear both sides of the story and figure out." "Okay. I get that, but when your safety is in question, it's not causing problems, it's protecting yourself, right?"
She said that she could not give him details while Dan was in the house, but she did indicate that she had just asked her husband for a divorce earlier that evening. At that time, she wanted to pack a bag and leave.
"Do you have a bag or suitcase up there? Or do you want to grab it?"
Details of what transpired emerged only after Kendi had safely left the house. In Kamiyai, she told her boyfriend Daniel and her parents that she had awoken in the night to the sight of her husband hovering over her. He was dressed entirely in black, wore gloves, and had items in both of his hands. She saw that on top of her, he held a pillow. She did not clearly see what was in his other hand, only that his gaze, directed down on her, was terrifying. He seemed to look straight through her. Kendi was certain that Dan was about to kill her. She had dialed Daniel Prado rapidly and locked herself in the bathroom. After Daniel disconnected, she kept her parents on the phone until the sheriff's deputy arrived. In the following days, her loved ones pleaded with her not to return to the house. By that time, she had realized that Dan had likely been holding a gun in his other hand. She had spotted a magazine out in the bedroom, which had been removed by the time police arrived. But the next day, Dan was trying to make amends. He called her 26 times, claiming that it had been a misunderstanding. He was accepting of the divorce, he said. She could come home and they would work through it. Kendi was anxious to finalize the divorce paperwork. She had also made two final appointments in Athol for her eyeglasses and nails, and she needed to do final check-ins at her work. Kendi decided to return. Dan had been caught red-handed. He wasn't stupid enough to try it again, she said. Her father gave her a gun for her own protection and asked her once again to please reconsider. It was the last time he would see his daughter alive. The investigation lasted 2 years before the Kootenai County Prosecutor's Office felt that they had a strong enough case against Daniel Howard to try him for murder. He was also charged with domestic battery for the bruising Kendi displayed in July of 2020. Prosecutors framed their argument around the quote by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, "When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth."
Having the ability to read a crime scene and collect evidence also gives you the ability to stage a crime scene and not leave evidence. Three questions. Who? Who had the opportunity? Well, Dan was the only other one in the house. Evidence will show you that. How? Who had the ability to stage a crime scene? Dan had the law enforcement training and experience needed to hide or leave little evidence at the scene. Why? What's the motive? Kendi was going to take half of everything in the divorce. $1 million.
When you see all the evidence, and we have concluded this case, the evidence is not impossible and has not been eliminated, and therefore we'll be asking you to find the defendant not guilty.
Boyfriend Daniel Prado told the jury about the bubbly and energetic Kendi Howard that he had known for most of his life. He spoke of their rekindled romance, as well as their future plans. Daniel was not only Kendi's new love, he was also her realtor.
Dan, was there a time that you were in love with Kendi?
Absolutely.
Through the course of your relationship, did you fall in love with her?
Yes.
Did you tell her that you loved her?
Yes, I did.
Did she tell you that she loved you?
Yes.
Is that something that you said to each other pre-cupping?
We did.
Kendi also spoke with Daniel Prado about visiting with a divorce attorney. The attorney told her that the house purchase should not be impacted by the divorce. The couple could not divide the house as an asset because she had not fully purchased it. The house would have been considered a debt. Yet, when speculating over Kendi's motivation to harm herself, Dan pointed specifically to her alleged realization that her new dream home would need to be liquidated and evenly divided along with everything else in the divorce. On the notepad listing the couple's division of assets was marginalia in Dan's handwriting, showing that Kendi's new house in Kamiyai would be included in their agreement. It seemed impossible that Kendi would have agreed to this and then been devastated by it, because she knew from her attorney that no such thing would happen. She was unlikely to lose the house. Dan, however, did not know this. Several witnesses close to Kendi, including Daniel, daughter Brooke, her best friend, brother, and parents, testified that Kendi hated guns. She'd never handled them and had never been observed loading one.
To your knowledge, Kendi Howard know how to do that?
Not to my knowledge.
Kendi's brother Brian, with whom she had been close, told the jury that Dan had been very suspicious of his wife in the days before her death. He asked his brother-in-law whether she was having an affair, and with whom. It was Brian's understanding that Kendi was not being unfaithful, though he knew that she was seeking a divorce.
Because I didn't know about the boyfriend, I had suspicion, I asked, and I was told no, they were just friends. And so I looked at that, you know.
Who was your suspicion?
Daniel Prada.
Only days before Kendi's death, Brian revealed these suspicions to Dan Howard. Dr. Howard's determination of the cause of death, the single gunshot wound, remained the most significant outstanding question that the state needed to resolve in order to make its case. A few months after the autopsy had been conducted, Dr. John Howard retired. According to his colleague, Dr. Jennifer Nera, he had spoken about little else for months before leaving, as though the doctor already had one foot out the door. It also emerged that in 2018, a total of 14 manner of death cases concluded by the forensic pathologist had been formally called into question and were under investigation. The state argued that Dr. Howard's conclusions were flawed, in part because after decades on the job, he had simply grown lazy and declared the easiest conclusion in this case without considering all the facts. Dr. Nera was tasked with reviewing and reevaluating her former colleague's report and conclusions on Kendi's case. She found that Kendi Howard had bruising in 30 distinct locations on her body, sustained before she was killed.
So the bruises that I pointed out in the photos that we all looked at, those were all injuries.
And most of those would be due to blunt force trauma?
Bruises, yes, due to blunt force trauma.
One of these areas was the chest, which would have been representative of cutting off someone's airways. Kendi also had a second-degree burn on her arm. This level of injury would have been extremely painful to expose to a warm or hot bath. The state argued that she was shot after she was dead. This explains the lack of blood at the scene. It was central to their theory. Former Spokane County Medical Examiner Dr. John Howard, for the first time in his career, took the stand for the defense. When he did, he stated that there is absolute positive evidence of a gunshot wound with the same amount of hemorrhage or bleeding I've seen in hundreds of other gunshot wounds that have proven fatal.
Was the amount of blood that you observed consistent with an intraoral gunshot wound?
Yes.
2 weeks into the trial, and just after the prosecution rested its case, the court paused for a three-day break over the weekend. That Friday night, Spokane International Airport Police in Washington State arrested Dan Howard at the airport. The conditions of his bond included an 11 p.m. curfew and meant that he was not allowed to be within 2 miles of the airport. After he was apprehended, defense counsel told the judge that Dan was simply following a friend who was returning a rental car, and not, in fact, trying to flee. The state said otherwise. It was perfect timing after such a strong case had been made against him. Dan had his bond revoked and was booked into the Kootenai County Jail for the remainder of the trial. During her closing argument, Julia Skofstall, deputy prosecutor for Kootenai County, put together all of the pieces. Kendi was fun. She was active and engaged in her life. The investigation had shown that the gunshot wound was not self-inflicted and had occurred after she was already dead. They theorized that Dan would have been trained in the carotid restraint technique, which cuts off blood flow, causing a person to pass out. Applied over an extended period of time, it will kill someone and leave little to no visible damage.
Hear the bath water running. Anyway, he says, I heard something hit the floor. Didn't sound like a shot. The same defendant, whose father testified that he's completely deaf in one ear. So he is a deaf in one ear, prior law enforcement officer who was on SWAT and was a firearms instructor. He cannot recognize the sound of a gunshot going off in a small room with an open door in his house, but he can hear the bathwater running. Ian Howard, he's an ex-Marine, was trained in that carotid restraint. He knew the dangers of that hold, the lethality of it. He had worked in law enforcement for a very long time, not just as a trooper, although troopers go to many fatal scenes, but beyond that, in SWAT, firearms instructor, defensive tactics instructor, and with knowledge, DNA, fingerprints, ballistics.
Defense attorney Jason Johnson painted a different picture of Kendi Howard. He claimed that she was going through a midlife crisis, having an affair and living a secret life. There were details in the state's case that were missing, and others did not line up. Two search warrants had been issued on the house, yet no gloves were found. How did Dan stage a scene so cleanly without gloves? Only days before, Kendi had claimed to see her husband dressed all in black, wearing gloves, hovering over her in the night, but no black clothing was ever identified in the house either. Finally, defense argued that there had been no clear outline of the steps that Dan had taken. Was Kendi killed elsewhere in the house and moved into the bath? Even the theory of the death had holes in it.
No theory. Was she placed in the tub, then water filled up, then shot? Why isn't there more water around? There's no, the only part of water is there's a damp in the bath house. It's not on the floor, it's not. If the water is in there, then it already, then Dan certainly would have blood on him. And again, it doesn't explain, there are no gloves found, so he would have had to use his hand and scrub it and put someone else's DNA in it. The state hasn't offered one theory on what happened.
The jury returned a verdict after 9 hours of deliberation.
Count one, is the defendant Daniel C. Howard guilty or not guilty of domestic battery? Guilty. Count two, is the defendant Daniel C. Howard guilty or not guilty of murder in the first degree? Not guilty. Is the defendant Daniel Howard guilty or not guilty of second degree murder? Guilty.
In late May 2024, Daniel Howard was back in court for a sentencing. In under 2 months since his conviction, the murderer had lost 50 pounds, the result of a hunger strike. Before receiving his sentence, Dan professed his innocence. He stated that he loves and misses his wife and the rest of his family.
I'm not that monster, I assure you, that people are betraying.
Sometimes the nature and gravity of the offense standing alone is sufficient to justify a fixed life sentence. And that is what I'm going to impose here.
First District Judge Lamont Barretts sentenced Dan Howard to a fixed life sentence, which will see him living out the rest of his life in prison with no chance of release. He was also given 10 years for domestic battery. That term will be served concurrently. Dan has become estranged from his two children. Brooke testified against him, telling the court how cruel he had been towards her mother. His son Wyatt was said to have accepted that his father was responsible for the murder as soon as he learned of his mother's death. Judge Barretts believed that there is little chance of Daniel Howard's rehabilitation. He concluded that you killed somebody who brought a lot of life and light to those around her, You snuffed that out because of your own pride and greed. That was the tragic case of Kendi Howard. Thanks for joining me, and a special thanks to Carmine's mom, Rochelle Wilkellis, and CB Delivery. This is your shout-out. Thank you for joining the Members Lounge. I'm Kevin, this is Just Thought Lounge, and I'll see you in the next one. When the scene plays, tell me who the scream saves. I can hear the cries repeat. Gotta take my time, cause these crimes get deep, but these stories can't hide. Let me find my seat. Kevin, go ahead and settle in. Gotta be selective, doing all the research, keeping it objective. Always been effective, can say he got a knack. Pick of the litter, you see how Newton got his back. Yeah, the content that you need, this could be a new sign. We talk in the comments, they jot in a few lines. Tune in and hit like, love that, it's too kind. Feels like the whole world.